The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Now, you might have noticed we missed last week's retro podcast, but we had so much going on with the Neil Druckmann exclusive interview and all that stuff, it sort of slipped through the net. So, really sorry about that, and I do hope you will forgive us. Now, if you're new, this is where we share some of our original episodes of Press X to Continue, which used to live on a different platform, used to be on BBC Sounds. This is the place where we put them on new platforms like Spotify and Apple and whatever for the first time ever. So we're sharing our classic episodes of the pod to new platforms. It's part of what we do here on the Continue Club. So I hope you have a nice time with this one. Basically, I was knocking around the loft the other day and I bumped into an old VR headset I used to have. So it got me thinking about VR games again. And so what we're going to do this week is we're going to go to June 2022 and listen to what we thought about VR games back then. And we do that with a stellar lineup of the comedian Glenn Moore and the Guardian's games editor, Keza. So they're along for the ride. You're along for the ride. Sit back and enjoy this one. Keza, this is the first time we've ever had a video games editor of a proper paper on. I feel like we're official now.
Hey, don't sound
tone,
great, George.
Oh, that's raise the tone.
Yeah. Now, since you are the a proper newspaper journalist and you're on with us, we thought we have to ask, what's the best or the biggest story you've covered this year, would you say?
Do you know, it's one that's going to come out quite soon, actually, but it's about the gaming awards with a Y.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because this is the first. This is an awards for like queer representation and gay representation in video games. Which, you know, I've been a video games journalist for 16 years. Let me tell you, not always the most welcoming industry. I went along and was really struck by what the awards kind of meant to everybody who was there, and also queer people find a lot of community in video games and always have, certainly in my experience. When I was a teenager, I would have loved to have had something like that. So I ended up talking to a bunch of queer gamers and Twitch streamers about kind of what their relationship with video games is like, and also what the kind of queer scene is like in the gaming world now. And it was great. It was one of the most fun features I've worked on in ages. It'll be coming out sometime this month.
Oh, looking forward to reading that. And Shay, one of our regular contributors, was, I think, giving an award at, or certainly at the Gaming Awards. And we did an episode last week. If people want to go and listen about diversity, different types of diversity in the games industry, you can go back and have a listen to that. And then once you've listened to that, then you've got to wait and read Keza's article when it hits the shelves.
Lots of homework.
Plenty of homework.
Yeah, there's homework on this episode. Yeah. Go on, is that how we operate here?
Remember your JSTOR logins. Come on.
Let's get on to some news then. Sonic the Hedgehog news to start with. We could play music of the trailer here, or we could use this excuse just to listen to the old school original music from Sonic the Hedgehog, which we're going to put in right about now. So the first videos of the new open world Sonic Frontiers have been released. They have not gone down very well on the socials, Inel, have they?
No, but do you know what? My personal opinion, I don't mind it. Do you know what I love about Sega?
Neutral.
No, it is. You know what I love about Sega and Sonic Team? They take risks with Sonic all the time. Every Sonic game is different. I love the fact that one time he was a werewolf, one time he's fighting dragons, another time he's 2D, another time he's 3D. I love the fact that they constantly kind of try stuff out. Not all the time. It doesn't work all the time.
So what do you see for people who've missed the trailer? What does it show off?
It shows off like an open world Sonic the Hedgehog in a almost like almost it, the world itself seems a bit bland to me because it's just green hills and brown
Emerald Zone. Yeah, from the first, that's what it is.
It is, but it doesn't look,
it doesn't look like it.
as vibrant as Emerald Zone,
no,
as you remember.
On the Mega Drive.
On the Mega Drive. Genuine. Yeah. The light, the colours and the sort of vibrancy of the Mega Drive version seemingly outshines this. And Keza, hashtag delay Sonic Frontiers is out there. Is it good that gamers can have this sort of interaction with developers like this? Or actually, is it kind of turn a bit nasty, turn a bit toxic?
I find the whole kind of entitled gamer fandom, not just gamer fandom, this is like across all fandoms everywhere now, but the kind of entitled fandom thing is almost always bad, generally, because it kind of reflects a lack of understanding about what it takes to make a game as well. Like, I mean, so you can delay that game all you like, it's not going to be dramatically different. Like, the most you can do really by delaying a game is like tweak it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you do not like what that game looks like, the whole premise of the thing, if you don't like all the assets that they've made for it, essentially the problem that people are pointing out is like, oh, it looks really bland, looks really empty. And it's like, well, they're not going to fix that by delaying it. Like, they'd have to cancel it and start again.
Yeah.
At the cost of many, many millions. But I do think, like, this is unusual because, right, do you remember the horrendous Sonic in the original Sonic the Movie trailer with the teeth?
How could I forget, Keza? It gave me nightmares.
Burn forever into our psyches, whether we like it or not. But that was actually changed because everybody on the internet went, this is terrible. My God. And now, obviously, that movie franchise is doing really well.
Yeah, that movie.
And that, you could say that was a direct result of like fan outcry.
Yeah.
So sometimes it works. And for Sonic, it's worked before.
And we actually quite liked that movie, didn't we? I know.
It was a great movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to be talking about TV shows next week. Not movies, but TV shows. So loosely themed, Keza. Thank you very much for allowing me to throw forward to next week. That's very good. Also this week, Battlefield 2042. Anybody still playing? Anybody still playing Battlefield other than producer Mike? Anybody
hey, me still and producer Mike still playing.
No, I know. Everyone's there's always a new one coming out, so everyone I know has migrated to Hell Let Loose. That's what everyone seems to be on now. So not even like Modern Warfare or anything like that. Everyone has. I don't know anyone who's playing.
No, well, there are finally some new bits of content coming for that game. New maps, some tweaks. Does anybody care? Here's a question for you, Inel. If a tree falls in a forest and nobody's around to hear it, was it even there?
Do you know what? For the people that really enjoy Battlefield, and this particular Battlefield 2042, they're having a good time. Playing with your friends is still a very fun experience. I think a lot of people, especially a lot of the older Battlefield veterans, they're comparing it obviously to previous entries, their favourites, Bad Company, Battlefield 1, and that's a lot of that is happening, and they're wondering why a lot of the features that were in those games aren't in this one.
We did a big thing, didn't we, last series, Glenn, about sort of Call of Duty versus Battlefield, Warzone versus Battlefield, and I think, you know, we know which ones sort of come out on top.
Yeah, but they do have to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and as a result they get more ridiculous, which is why we have Warzone at the moment featuring King Kong and Godzilla. Now, if you told someone 2 years ago that would happen, they would go, I've already uninstalled the game.
Yes, yeah. Well, I haven't played it since that, actually, it kind of lost me. But, you know,
you can farm experience points by shooting King Kong in a particular region of his body, and I find that insane.
Yeah, and then we're out. Now, people have been getting very excited. People aren't necessarily excited about Battlefield at the moment. People are very excited about the recent PlayStation State of Play, which had a lot more announcements in it than people, because sometimes, I mean, I can remember staying up late watching a State of Play and literally nothing of any note was mentioned, but there's quite a lot of stuff in here, whether it's the new Final Fantasy 16 footage, Street Fighter 6.
When you go looking for strength, it's not like a game. This journey doesn't have a real ending. Okay then, hope you're ready to begin. If you want to start off on the right foot in this city, hit the streets.
Yeah, hey Dad. Oh, okay, where did that come from?
Because usually...
Does that not look totally sick? It looks, I'm really impressed by Street Fighter 6.
Is that the thing that grabbed you the most, do you think, Keza, from all those announcements?
Oh, there was that, and then there was a new game I hadn't heard of called Season, A Letter to the Future. Mm. Which is essentially, it seemed to be a kind of travelogue game about a photojournalist going around and documenting the end of a season, and there seems to be this hint that something really, really bad is going to happen to all these people at the end of this season. I think being a journalist, I was just like, "Ooh, look, a photojournalism game. I'm into that." But I thought it looked really interesting and really like visually arresting as well.
Yeah,
I think and Rollerdrome too. That was like Jet Set Radio with guns. Like, what more could you want?
I think because of the events of the last couple of years, we're so used to with these state of play events where they just sort of say, "This is what we're currently at the moment. This is where we're at. This is how the games are getting on." We're so used to people preemptively saying, "Don't expect any new titles to be announced. We're just going to show you progress of existing games." So I felt like maybe people were expecting maybe like God of War footage or a God of War release date or something like that. So to suddenly see Resident Evil 4 in there as a remake, oh my God, I can't wait.
You're excited for that?
I'm so excited just because of how good 2 was as a remake.
Yeah, I mean, the remakes have been fantastic and interesting. The thing that sort of stuck in my mind for all the announcements were made, so Final Fantasy 16, Street Fighter 6, the Resident Evil 4 remake, all these things were in there. Career mode in Street Fighter 6. What the hell is that?
Yeah. That, I mean, it reminded me of Shenmue.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on in career? No, I'm just mashing buttons and beating fools up. That's what I'm doing in Street Fighter. What's this career mode all about?
Or it's like Yakuza, you know, wandering around picking fights with randos. Like, I'm into it.
I think it could work. I think it could definitely work. And I know they've tried to do all sorts of different kind of online lobbies and things in the past. This is obviously like a kind of create your meld your own career character mode, but they also kind of tease what the kind of lobby system's going to look like. And it looks nice. It's a cross between what they kind of did with Dragon Ball Z and like Dead or Alive 4 back in the day with their lobby systems. You're able to walk around and observe fights that are going on and do other things. Mm. But like this PlayStation State of Play, I enjoyed it. Like, for those that don't know, like, the State of Plays are like PlayStation's way of showcasing what's coming up, games they have coming up later in the year. And I was really interested in the PSVR 2 stuff because I've been waiting to see where PlayStation going to take the PlayStation VR 2 in the future. And like, some of the games they got coming up look very, very nice. That Horizon Zero Dawn kind of VR experience looks fantastic.
Well, Einel, it's almost as if we're professional. You know, it's almost as if we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because what you've done there is you've teed up our big talking point.
Look at this
episode, which is VR and VR gaming. I wanted to chat about it because right at the start of this run of the podcast, Claire, who one of our regular contributors, said in one of our chats, I just don't get VR gaming. And I was like, oh, hallelujah, you're speaking my language, Claire, I agree with you. But it keeps coming up as like the big thing of the future. Okay, we just had a bunch of announcements. You know, Sony have doubled down on VR with their new headset coming. Lots of people are in the industry around saying this is how games are going to be in the future. So we haven't really got into it on the podcast. So let's do that right now. That's what we're going to do this week. Now, Keza, me and you did a feature when I was working doing a program that I do for BBC Wales about the insurance costs around VR. Yeah. Honestly, I do talk to you. I like to talk to you about other things other than VR as well.
This is the one conversation that we've committed.
It just happens to be that you're on with us this week when we are talking about VR gaming again. Glenn, so VR gaming, if you've lived under a rock for the last 10 years, is when you put a headset on and you can look around you and you are there, you are in the moment, in the place, not just playing on a flat screen.
Yes.
Do you play VR games? Are you bothered?
No, I am bothered. It is something I'm really intrigued by. I'm just so aware of what an investment it is. I remember being really envious of friends of mine who had the latest Half-Life game, and that's a VR game that's really interactive. If you break a window, you can pick out the individual shards of glass and stuff like that. But the amount of money that it looked like it required to have a good enough PC to run it, the game itself, the latest VR equipment, and it's not only just an investment in terms of buying the stuff, it throws you into a game in which you can't do other activities. One thing that we're kind of missing of next-gen gaming is the loading times on the new Xbox and the PS5 are so quick that you sort of miss being able to sort of check your phone every time you die, every time you get a game over. And that's been eradicated. And I think with VR headsets, you can't do anything else. You're in the game now for however long you're playing. You can't interact with anyone else in the outside world.
That's sort of the point.
It's like you're plugged into the Matrix. You can't do anything.
All right. So for you then, Einel, because I'll be honest with you, the thing that never the thing that I think VR gaming has been missing, and we'll talk about the price point that Glenn's mentioned. We'll talk about how clunky it can be in a sec. Mm-hmm. For me, the thing that VR gaming has missed so far is a game that I have to play. I have to own this bit of kit in order to play that game, like Mario 64 with the N64 or GoldenEye, or you know, like Uncharted or Last of Us for the PlayStation more recently. So that's my issue with it, is there's not one thing, one experience that I have to have a VR headset to play.
There are those experiences. That would be my counterpoint.
Yeah.
Those experiences are there. The issue
what
is
are they,
Half-Life.
The thing about Half-Life, Alyx, though, is that pretty much everyone I know was desperate for a new Half-Life for like a decade, right? And then Half-Life, Alyx came out. Did anyone play it?
Yeah.
I played the first half hour of it and then forgot it existed because it's such a pain to set up and it's such a pain to play, you know? And like pretty much everyone I know, even the people who were like super, super excited for any kind of new Half-Life, Alyx just kind of, you know, they've ended up just not that impressed by it. And I think it's partly that barrier to entry.
Yeah.
That we were talking about, right? It's the expense and everything that it costs.
Yeah, because the barrier to entry is high, those games that may be there, they've got to be better than just...
They are. There's games like Lone Echo. There's games like Half-Life. And I believe if you do knuckle down and you put a couple of hours into Half-Life, it is a magical experience. The issue, it's got an onboarding problem. As everybody's been saying, it's super expensive. And when you do play it, you're not kind of sure what am I supposed to be experiencing. Like all the issues that people are talking about VR have been solved, but it's the marketing around it is a bit different because there's lots of different VR headsets and lots of different VR platforms. It's hard to kind of understand which one goes with which. And so, like, for example, Glenn says you can't do anything on your phone. You can do all your phone stuff in VR. Like, you can hook your phone up to VR and you can take your calls, you can check your messages, you can do all of those things. You can have your video calls. Like, you can operate your phone in VR if you wanted to.
Do you feel like you're a Minority Report when you're doing that?
You do kind of.
Yeah.
But stuff is all there. Like, and the experiences are there. VR chat is like, it's like, I liken VR to like the first time you use the internet. First time you use the internet, you kind of need someone to show you around where to go, what to do. Otherwise, you're going to end up in some places you don't want to go to. Mm. And that's kind of like VR in the same sense that there's some magical, amazing experiences, some incredible, like not even just games, just experiences that have been put and crafted in VR, like from like theatre production companies, from dance outlets, from even the BBC themselves have done like a Doctor Who experience in VR, which is incredible. But like, you wouldn't know they were there unless someone showed you. And otherwise, if you spent your own time there, you might end up and you find yourself like in some weird chat room talking to someone that you don't want to talk to.
So I think that there are brilliant experiences in VR, but I don't think that that makes it enough for people to make the investment. And therefore, I don't think it can necessarily be talked about as the answer just yet. And because we've talked a lot about access issues, here's sort of roughly the costs. Mm. If you've got a high-end, powerful, jazzy PC and you want to go really big on VR and you buy the Valve Index, it's around £700. Mm-hmm. The HTC Vive Pro, something similar. Now, you can get a PlayStation VR that runs on a PS4 for about £200, and you can get a Meta Quest for about £300, and that's the easiest to use because they ain't got no cables.
No, there's even cheaper, and I think that's why everyone's forgetting the onboarding problem is there. There's Google Cardboard that you can use for like... You can get
but am I
going to
play
pounds.
A game on Google Cardboard?
It's really lame, mate. You can get a Samsung Gear
VR for Samsung phones for like £50. And you can access the Oculus mobile store on there with tons of Oculus-enabled games that you can play using your phone on a Samsung Gear VR. Mm. Like those stuff.
How do you play Beat Saber
there?
On a Samsung Gear VR?
Yeah.
Do you reckon then that the future of VR is an experience that you go to and it's a ticketed thing that you go to, like if you're going to an escape room and that way you get in a controlled environment, it's really high budget, you're in a massive space, you're not in a cramped living room, because there's something about PS, like doing VR at home that is very, we don't need Coca-Cola, we've got the own brand version. No, because it can't be as good at home, surely. It's such a faff to set up, and it's a bit like 3D TVs in like 2010 when that looked like it was gonna be the future, but you're like, the family are not going to sit around with these glasses on.
I think,
dude, I'd forgotten all about the 3D TV thing. Yeah, we got one. We were really excited about
Did
it.
You?
We had the glass. Like, yeah, we watched films in for about.
You
10
watched
minutes.
Avatar every day.
Yeah. But this is what I mean. Like, for example, like there's new experiences out there that gamers haven't been experiencing because they haven't tried it because of access and stuff like that. But there's stuff there. For example, like I know a lot of people don't like it, but like on platforms like Meta, they do like live comedy shows there where hundreds of people can get together, they can go into a room and they can watch a live stand-up who's on the other side of the world in New York performing live to them, and they are in completely separate places. Those experiences you can only get in VR.
I don't mind that, but I'm just talking about gaming, right? If I look at the games that I've played in VR that I liked...
Lone Echo.
Beat Saber is brilliant for 10 minutes. Tetris Effect is brilliant for half an hour. Star Trek Bridge Crew is the closest I've still got to having a really fun, amazing experience in VR. But I don't want to put 40, 50 hours into them like I do with... I don't know, I didn't with Elden Ring, but you know what I mean?
But you're not supposed to.
No, maybe you're not supposed to. And maybe, so that's why the difference where VR gaming is going to change compared to the rest is maybe it's short, sharp experiences, not gaming in the sort of
that's what it's always been
known.
That's what I've not seen a 100-hour VR game. I've not seen one.
No,
VR works best when you only have to spend 10 minutes, half an hour, maximum an hour in it. Because apart from anything else, one of the interesting things about VR that really has to be fixed at some point, if it really is going to be the future of social media or the future of experiential entertainment or games, is that women experience a much greater level of motion sickness in VR than men. And because most of the engineers who've developed VR are men, this is a problem that's only became evident when VR kind of got out into the populace. But like, women are much more likely to find VR like a genuinely like physically uncomfortable experience. It makes you motion sick. And a lot of men get this problem too, but it is a bigger problem for women. And I think that that's an illustration of one of the problems with VR as it currently stands. It's basically most of the games in VR being made by and for a very small subset of like very high income, very like cutting edge tech focused people. That's fine, but that's never going to be the future of gaming. It's like one little section of it, and that's cool. But if it's going to go mainstream, there's a lot of stuff that I think needs to get sourced out.
Now, we've had a lot of fads in gaming in the past, and so many so that we were going to actually talk about fads on this episode, but there's so many fads out there, we're going to sort of do that in another episode, just about gaming fads. If you could, Einel, if you could... here's an interesting question to finish off this conversation. If you could take one game that you loved and whack it in VR and make it a fun experience, what would it be? What would that game be?
Oh, it would be really simple and you guys would be really underwhelmed.
Don't tell me Ring Fit in VR.
No. That's already there. There's better versions of those.
Yeah.
Mine would be like VR Picross.
Because
I love Picross. But that's what I said. It'll
Picross
be
the puzzle game in VR,
That's what I say. It'd be very underwhelming for you guys. But like in VR, I'd love it. Absolutely love it.
What about you, Glenn? If you could do a game and take it another title and stick it into VR?
I think it'd be a game that... something open-worldy. I think maybe Yakuza Like a Dragon. Because that would be really fun doing the fist fights and stuff like that in VR. But also, it was a really immersive city experience as well. I think as well, I mean, it's a game that's got its fair share of problems. I think Cyberpunk was so immersive that to be able to walk around like that in VR and look around, that was something people were already doing with the thumbsticks, just constantly just looking around Night City.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing in VR.
And what about you, Keza? What would you transport into a VR place if you could?
Mirror's Edge.
Oh, that would be great.
That would be so good
in VR. That's one of those games that I think was before its time in many ways, and I actually think that's a game that would work brilliantly in VR.
I do think one thing, I know it's got a point, one thing that VR does a good job of is scary. I can remember playing, it was called Kitchen originally, which was the demo, which then became Resident Evil 7, which is in VR, and I...
Still the scariest experience.
Imagine going down into that basement.
Shivers.
Must be terrifying.
I've got a funny story about Kitchen.
Yeah, what was your Kitchen story? I can't swear on this BBC podcast, but the S word.
I know the part as well.
That's what I did.
I know the part
on camera. So it was really, really great.
That year I went to Gamescom, the games convention, and that VR demo was there, and I had an appointment to see it. Thing was, I was quite heavily pregnant at this time.
Don't do that,
Keza.
Oh no!
I walked into the demo room with Capcom, and everyone looked at me and was like, yeah, we don't think you should play this. So I had to sit and watch somebody else play it, and that was bad enough.
That was probably a sensible idea.
And now for seeing it on the screen was bad enough.
Because it's VR is good at scary. Mm-hmm. I'd be really interested in a Last of Us experience in VR. Ooh. Because hearing that clicking sound when it's all around you would be pretty terrifying. Press X to continue. Keza, we obviously we're going to give you the opportunity now to take control of the prestigious, the well-loved, the soon-to-be award-winning Hall of Game feature, right? So these are the greatest games ever made, all put into one place. You have got the power to put a game into that hall, and if we vote for it and it gets in, then congratulations. If not, then, you know, there's a high bar here. Mm. Of all the games in the world...
She walks into mine.
Yeah. And choose.
Great reference.
And chooses what? What's your choice?
This is so much build up. I've considered very carefully, folks, and it's going to be Guitar Hero.
Guitar Hero. Oh. Okay. Talking of sort of fans, gaming fans, interesting. So why guitar? Of all the I wasn't expecting that. I like it. Why Guitar Hero?
Guitar Hero is the closest that it is possible to feel to being a real rock star without being a real rock star. It's one of those things that at the time, in retrospect, you look back and you saw, oh man, everyone spent this weird period of the late 2000s running around, like pressing buttons on a little plastic guitar. And it all looks kind of comical in retrospect. But I played it again recently. My goodness, does that game make you feel amazing? Like, it really transports you somewhere. It transports you to a fantasy that pretty much everybody, well, every millennial, I don't know if this is still the case, but everybody wanted to be a rock star at some point, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a universal dream, and it's a classic. For me, it's like what video games are kind of for sometimes, is to give you that, the dream that you can't, for whatever reason, have in real life. The rock star dream, Guitar Hero really properly captured it. First time out the gate, it captured it, and it managed to sustain that for however many years until the plastic instrument fad died.
Yeah,
but when you play it today, it's still just so good, especially like some of the track selections, like that solo in More Than a Feeling. That moment when you kick the guitar up and it's new, that is irreplicable. I've rarely had such fun ever in my life playing a game as I do when I'm playing that solo.
I can vividly remember being in university when my mate first completed Knights of Cydonia by Muse on Guitar Hero for the first time. So for me, for all those nostalgic memories of uni, I'm leaning towards yes, but I do also need to put my impartial hat on. Glenn, what are you saying? Yes or no? Guitar Hero.
It really was a fad for me. It was something I played a lot at uni for a couple of years. Never ever managed to get through more than a few bars of Through Fire and Flames. It was really, really hard. So much of it was difficult. I really, really enjoyed it. Again, it's so immersive. And weirdly, I found myself missing it and wanting the guitar when one of the favorite games I played this year, Artful Escape, I wish you could use a Guitar Hero controller for that. Because that is a game about playing guitar, but you just press like square and it's not the same.
Yeah.
So I wish Guitar Hero had had more of an effect just on gaming and over the years. But it really does trick you into thinking you're an amazing guitar player. Because it's simplistic enough where it is just those four or five buttons and then you just flip a button to strum a chord. But my God, it can get so complicated. You really feel like there's an element of skill. Like, it takes so much skill to do well in those. It's so excellent.
I know.
I was never a fan. I'm not into rock music. I'm not into rock music. And if you're not into rock music, what is the appeal?
To be fair, that is completely fair.
That is a very valid point.
Like
DJ Hero, I guess.
I like Harmonix's other titles. I like Dance Central, what they did with that. I thought that was fantastic.
But Harpsichord Hero, the Beethoven one.
No, never tried it. But like, I hear what you guys are saying, but then I'm looking at the effect that game has had on other titles and the gaming industry as a whole. We've not seen anything since the Beatles Rock Band, have we? And that was, what, 10, 15 years ago? And I don't know. I think it was a fad. I think it was a fad that a bunch of people got involved with and got excited about. But for the rest of us, oh no, I didn't touch it.
Doesn't it almost make it more special that it was just this one perfect moment in time for a couple of years?
That's fine. But it was this beautiful, beautiful games of all time.
Okay, right. No,
but few games could make you feel that happy. It really was a happy game.
If you like rock music,
okay. So obviously Keza's putting Guitar Hero up there, and it's a great show, Keza. Glenn, you're going to vote yes.
Yeah.
Ainel, you're voting no.
Nope.
Which means it comes down to me, Keza, and I don't have much power in this place, but. When it's a tiebreaker, I have the power, and it's great. I have a very happy. I am already back in my old student house, slightly hungover on a Thursday morning, watching my mate Martin trying to finish Knights of Cydonia. I remember it. I am very fondly. It's making me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. However, I take Einel's point that actually, in terms of a lasting impact on the games industry, and I don't think. It's up there with some of these other titles that we've got in there, and it's kind of died a bit of a death.
It's died a huge death.
And so therefore, Keza...
Does everything have to be eternal? Does everything have to be eternal? Just putting it out there.
It's a very,
does
very,
everything have to last forever? No, you can have a perfect, perfect, beautiful moment that you all share for that time, and then it can be fleeting and that can still be beautiful. Just saying.
And you know what, Keza? It is beautiful. It's beautiful, but it's going to have to be beautiful outside of the Hall of Game, I'm afraid.
That's it.
No.
That's it.
Shocker.
That's it.
I know.
You made the right choice. You made the right choice, Steph.
Okay, I'm sorry. Look, but and I
it's
feel,
full in there, bro. It's full.
Can I say I feel sad about that because, like I said, I love Guitar Hero. And on that controversial bombshell.
What a horrible way to end. Yeah.
You've dashed all of our nostalgic, lovely feelings, and now we're just feeling resentful inside.
I'm sorry about that.
But nostalgia should not count for games of going into the Hall of Games.
No, but this isn't like Brexit the game. It was a fun thing.
But
we're not like clouded with insane nostalgia.
It's inherently fun. That's what the game.
That being said, Keza, if you do happen to have a spare Guitar Hero guitar and you find she's sending it over to me, then I would very quickly accept.
Keza, I've still got him.
So you made it to the end of the Continue Club. Thank you very much. You're here with all the XC Beasts in attendance. Well done, you. We will see you Tuesday for the next episode of Press X to Continue. Bye-bye.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.